Blog Talk Radio.
I look in the mirror. 2020 vision, see myself more clearer. Face trials and many errors, but Lord, you never let me down. And for that, notice I'm better now. Even when the folks wanna.
Welcome to the Be Inspired with Michelle G Show. I am your host, Michelle G. I am excited about the show tonight. It's a serious topic, but I'm excited to be the one to bring it to this platform. Tonight I have joining me the pioneer author and some of the co-authors of Chronicles of the Chronically Ill. This show, I believe, is going to be a very inspirational show and an encouraging show, because you never know what a person is going through and the battles they're battling on the inside. And a lot of times when we're going through things and we're going through different sicknesses and different illness and even just situations in our life, we have a tendency, and I've been guilty of it a time or two myself, we have a tendency to let that thing take over us. And especially when it comes to an illness, you almost get to a point where you give up. Well, this show, I think, is going to be so inspirational, because it's the authors of this great book are all women who are battling with different chronic illnesses, but they didn't let it stop them. They are living full lives. So for all the listeners out there, I want to say, before the show even starts, I want to say to you all, if you are dealing with something, a chronic illness or whatever the situation is, you still have a life to live. If you're still breathing, you still have purpose. There's a reason you're here. Don't let that situation, that illness, take over you. Don't let it become bigger than you. It doesn't go away. Sometimes it does. Sometimes it doesn't go away. But even if it's just there and you know you got to live with it, find a way to live with it and move forward. If you're, like I said before, if you're breathing, you have purpose. So that's why I'm so excited about the show tonight, because I know these ladies are going to be an inspiration to all who listen to this show nationwide. I'm going to go ahead and jump on. I think I have the pioneer author, Dr. Blades, on, and I have three other of the ladies. So there's four of them joining me tonight, and I'm going to briefly read a little bit of their bios, because I really want to get into this discussion. And I'm going to start the pioneer author, Dr. Marquita S. Blades, is an award-winning educator, international speaker, best-selling author, and education consultant with 16 years of high school as a high school science teacher and manager of national STEM programs for high-achieving high school students. Dr. Blaze is the owner of Dr. Blaze Consulting, which offers prescriptive solutions to learning institutions and individuals through professional development programs, curriculum and assessment writing, conference planning and programming, and individual teacher educational consultant coaching services. Dr. Blaze is also the founder of the Mediocre Teacher Project, which helps teachers avoid the battle through burnout by incorporating their unique gifts and talents into their daily practices. Dr. Blaze holds a bachelor's degree in interdisciplinary studies in broad fields of science from Georgia State University. She has a master's of science in technology and professional communication. She has a doctor of education in instructional leadership. She is just an awesome woman. She holds lots of degrees, and when you talk to her, you hear her speak, you'll understand. She is now working. Dr. Blaze enjoys reading. When she's not working, she enjoys reading, cooking, and traveling with her husband. You can learn more about Dr. Blaze and her work by visiting www.drmarquitablaze.com. All right, Dr. Brown. I'm just going to briefly go through these, because I'm really excited about having these ladies on the show. Dr. Brown was born and raised in St. Louis. from a similar type background as the community, she has made her life mission to service. She was written off as another hyperactive, unteachable, time-consuming, and in concluding, unproductive, destructive statistic. Now, that says a lot, because we've heard that a lot about different children. Some of us have heard that about our children. So she's coming from that. And notice her name is Dr. Brown. So she didn't let that hinder her, what people said about her, even when she was, or what they thought about her, even when she was at a young age. She's going to be coming on. I'm going to let her talk a little bit more about herself and the things that she does. I'm trying to go through this because I know my show is only an hour, and I really want to get into this show with these ladies. I also have joining me tonight Miss Latrinda Rush. She is the co-author of Chronicles of the Critically Ill. She is the author of His Hymn, A Touch of His Garment, and an upcoming book, Absent But Present, In the Place of Humility. She is a mother of four beautiful children and married to her college sweetheart of 15 years. And she is passionate in what she do while walking and living a purposeful life. We also have joining us Ms. Gretchen Hyatt. She is 41 years old and the mother of a 19-year-old daughter, a 3-year-old daughter, and an 8-month-old son. She is originally from Little Rock, Arkansas, and she currently resides in Concord, North Carolina. She suffers from type 1 bipolar disorder and fibromyalgia for over 15 years. She has been clean and sober since April of 2017. Gretchen's ongoing work in recovery with mental and physical health challenges has driven her to help others that suffer to get the support and encouragement as they work on their challenges and recover efforts. There's a lot more to these ladies. I'm going to cut it short right there because I want to bring them on because I can see they're already on the line. I'm going to bring them on so we can get this discussion started. I haven't done their bios justice, but we're going to give them time at the end of the show to tell a little bit about themselves and other things that they got upcoming and things that they got going on. So I'm going to bring them on. Hello, ladies.
Hello.
Good evening.
Hi.
Hello. How are you?
I am wonderful, and I love the way it just echoes. Everybody is on the line. forgive me, I didn't do everybody's bio justice, but I'm going to give you time at the end of the show to tell a little bit more about yourself and what you want the listeners to know. But I really wanted to get into this discussion because for me, I know a lot of people who battle with different kind of illnesses, and I see from the outside looking in how sometimes they live a defeated life. And that's why I think that this show is so important. Since we have so many on the show tonight, what I'm going to do is I'm going to pose a question, and then I'll call you by name to respond if that's okay. And we're just going to let the show flow how it goes, okay?
Okay.
Sounds good.
All right. I'm going to start with the pioneer author of this wonderful book. I'm going to start with Dr. Glaze. How are you today?
Michelle, I am wonderful, and thank you for having us. Thank you for inviting us to share your platform.
Oh, you are more than welcome. I think this is this book is just meant to be an inspiration to so many. I want to start with you because I want to say, can you explain a little bit about, because I want to go with each one of you about the chronic illness that you deal with. I want to start with you. I already know yours, but the listeners, because you've been on my show before, but I want you to tell about your chronic illness, but then what made you want to write a book about this?
Okay. So, yes, my chronic illness, my diagnosis is lupus. Also, though, there are some little side diagnoses that go along with that. So when you have lupus, you may also have what's called Raynaud's syndrome, and I'll explain what that is. You also may have a little bit of rheumatoid arthritis, and at times I was classified as having mixed connective tissue disease. And what all of that boils down to, I just say lupus because that's the thing that I think people are vaguely familiar with, and there's still a lot of people who don't know what it is. But what it boils down to is just that your body's cells are attacking, your body is attacking itself. It thinks that your cells are foreign particles, and so the body tries to attack and get rid of those cells that it believes to be foreign. And so for me, my lupus manifests itself through a lot of muscle weakness, muscle pain, joint pain.
Yes.
Sometimes I get rashes. I have a lot of brain fog and cognitive disorders. So a lot of times, just simple tasks, I'm not able to complete either physically or the thinking task, the mental thing. Sometimes I have problems thinking through and just getting my thoughts together. So for me, it has been physically debilitating, but I think the biggest toll that it has taken on my life is that it stripped me of my independence at one point, where I had to rely on my mom and then later in life my husband for a lot of my basic needs that most people just kind of wake up and they do without thinking about. I have to be very calculated, and I have to plan everything in advance, and I have to plan that around whether or not there's going to be someone available to provide me assistance to get it done. And so that's my lupus in a nutshell.
Wow. I mean, it just sounds like, and I know a few people who do, who have lupus, and like you said, it does come with, there's a lot of other things, like the arthritis and different things like that. For you, what did it mean putting this book together? Like, what was the starting point? What was it finally that you finally made you say, okay, you know what, this needs, people need to understand, and people need to hear this. You know, what made you get to that point and want to write this book?
Well, when I was initially diagnosed, the first 2 or 3 years, I really, I kind of really hid behind my face with the disease. And so I didn't fully come to terms with it. I would say all the time, you know, I'm not going to claim this. And, you know, and I figured as long as I didn't claim it, and if I just continued living my life the way that I had always lived it, it wouldn't be an issue or a concern. And for some people, that does work. You know, some people, they can pray and meditate and never have a problem again. For me, that did not work. It actually was the opposite. In my 3 years of saying, you know what, I just don't claim it, and I just continue to walk in my faith or whatever, the disease literally started to deteriorate my body from the inside out. And I continue functioning, for the most part, at a fairly high level, even while I was in a lot of pain and I was heavily dependent upon my mom to take care of me behind the scenes. But when I showed up at work, I was still being recognized for stellar performance, and people were still looking to me to be a model teacher. And so when I would have those days where I couldn't turn a doorknob, or I would get stuck in my chair and I couldn't get up and walk around, or I couldn't write on the board because I couldn't raise my arm, and I would ask people for help, and they literally would laugh at me, ignore me. They would say, oh, you just want some attention. You know, why are you acting like this? Girl, ain't nothing wrong with you. Girl, look at you. Look at your hair. Look at what you got on. Girl, it can't be that bad if you're coming in here looking like that. You know, so I literally got no compassion, no sympathy from people, and it hurt my feelings initially. But down the road, I started to realize that people don't know what they don't know, and this is just a lack of education. So I knew that a point would come where I would have to start sharing my story. And so I started sharing it publicly on social media because I was inspired by one of my co-authors, who is also my soror, Gretchen, and y'all will hear from her a little bit later. But Gretchen would share her journey with her challenges openly on Facebook, and she inspired me to kind of start doing the same. And so later, once I resigned from teaching, I knew that it was time to actually put it in a book. And when I got to the point where I wanted to put it in a book, I also was physically, I felt like physically I wouldn't be able to write an entire book by myself. And so I decided to do an anthology instead and to invite other people to share their stories as well.
Wow. And you know what? And I'll say this about a lot of times, like you were saying, you didn't get any sympathy or anybody, you know, nobody had compassion. And, you know, you look at it and you're right. People don't know. You know, they just assume and they expect if you are battling with some kind of illness, they expect for you to look a certain way. So if you wash your face, dress yourself up and come out and you still perform and you do what, you know what I'm saying? They think that, oh, you're okay. Not knowing that you're battling this thing for real, but, you know, and that's one of my pet peeves. You don't have to look like what you're going through. Why should I look like I'm down?
And that's what I used to tell people. If I came in here, I can't look bad and feel bad all in the same day, because then I'm going to be even more depressed than I already am. And I would say to people, yeah, I look like this, but I didn't even put these clothes on myself. You know, I didn't do my hair. I didn't drive myself to work. The lessons
that you see me
implementing are like five-year-old lessons that I've been doing for years. But to them, it seemed awesome. But to me, it was like, I know I can do better than this. But I don't have the physical strength or the energy to do anything more. To y'all, it looks impressive. But I know deep down, it wasn't my personal best.
Wow, and see that's the part they look at the outer appearance and then they make their assumptions and they don't really know, and in part you can't really be upset with it, because people if they don't know. Those who once they do know still have that same attitude. That's where the issue comes in. But if you don't know, you don't know. But if we could ever get into the state of the place where we don't just assume something about somebody. That's just like somebody that walks in, and when you see them, they're always dressed. They always carry themselves a certain way. We have a tendency to say, oh, they bougie. They think they all that. No, they may. You don't know what they're going through, what it took for them to get dressed and to come out and to show up.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And they
might be
the most insecure person.
Exactly. But it's just that, you know, and then you get the stares and you get the people whispering, and you don't know that you're that person on the outside. Yeah, they're holding their head up and they're coming in and they're dressed from head to toe, but they see the stares and they hear the whispers, and you don't know that you are tearing that person down inside.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's one of my biggest issues, because, you know, we often do that. And don't get me wrong, when I was younger and before I matured, I used to be that way. But I'm talking about when I was younger. Since I've gotten in my adult age, I'm like, hold up, this is that, you know, that's not right. You know, come on now, because now I know how I am. And I've been on both sides of it. I've dished it out and I've received it. And once I received it, I was like, oh, wow, you mean to tell me I did that to somebody?
Mm-hmm.
And it was a wake up call. When I came home and I had to cry myself to sleep, you know, when I had to cry myself to sleep because my feelings were hurt so bad, you know,
mm-hmm.
that was a wake-up call for me. And that's when I changed my way of thinking, changed my way of approaching people. And even if you come in, somebody can come in and their clothes be raggedy and torn. That may be one of the richest people walking on the face of this earth, but you turn your nose up because they're not dressed apart. It works both ways.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I had to be in those shoes. I had to feel it. To see what I was putting out on other people. And that's why I was so excited about this book, because people need to hear. I'm going to go to Miss Gretchen. Can you tell the listeners, I read it briefly in your bio. Can you tell the listeners a little bit about your illness that you're battling? And what was it like for you to write this? Was it therapeutic? How did it help? Can you just tell the listeners a little bit about the illness you're battling with?
I was diagnosed August of 2003 with type 1 bipolar disorder, but it was after going a whole summer back and forth to the doctor, back and forth to a therapist, and then I got a referral to a psychiatrist, and during my initial meeting with my psychiatrist, I had the first of a few psychotic breaks and was admitted to the hospital. And at first, it was a different type of bipolar disorder, and then they finally, through med management, they were able to pinpoint that it was actually manic depression instead of more of the depressive, because I actually was exhibiting a lot of the symptoms, and none of the meds that they were giving me was making it better, was making it worse. So it's very important off bat, when you know something is wrong, don't let up. You know, let them keep digging deeper. They can deal it every which way they can. They gonna do it anyway. So make sure if they're gonna be, you know, trying this and trying that, and you know you're gonna be feeling like a guinea pig, be vocal and say it's not working or it's making me worse. And because they felt, because I came in with depression, that it was an antidepressant that I needed. Well, if you're manic depressive, all it's going to do is make you go suicidal or go homicidal, because every bipolar, people got to understand, yes, you can be diagnosed with a mental illness, but how it resonates with you is going to be different how it resonates with someone else.
Mm-hmm.
And through you telling someone your side effects or how you're feeling, that's how they can know or go, it's bipolar, but it's not this type, it's that type. And that's how you get balanced back out soonest. As far as me writing the book, what a lot of people didn't know was after I said yes to Marquita to write, I had unexpectedly had my child early. And so when I actually was supposed to have my part done, I was going to be postpartum. So initially, when I was supposed to have my part done, the timing. I thought, okay, well, I'll have my baby on time and be able to have my stuff in on time. Well, that didn't work that way. And I didn't want to not. And actually, I almost quit, but the publisher was like, is there another way I can communicate? Because also during that time, I had a major fibromyalgia flare-up where I couldn't use my fingers. I couldn't type. I couldn't swipe. I couldn't
do
anything. So I had to do voice to text to finish out my chapter. And so that's how I was able to get it done. But I'll just tell you, between the fibromyalgia and the chemical imbalance of the mental illness, I try to be a little bit less on titles and stuff, because it's not who I am. And so I work in the community of mental health with people with severe and persistent mental health challenges, and some of them are also in recovery, like, you know, such as I am, and they also may have a chronic illness. But the one thing I always tell them is that don't lean on those diagnoses. You know, do what you can do on the days that you can do, and on the days that you can't, forgive yourself. Just forgive yourself. You know, just as long as you learn to work within your limitations, nothing can stop you. I have learned that's how I've been able to have kids, you know, have babies. I currently reside, I don't have family, you know, per se, and I don't have, you know, really like close friends, but I have developed a community of resources and support, so that when I need, you know, things, I'm able to obtain it. And so I tell people all the time, lean on your community. Lean on the resources. It's there for us. Don't be ashamed to go into these places and let them know your situation. You don't have to get it detailed, but it's so many things out here to assist you to live independently. Classes that are free. It's just so many things. And we don't, because we're afraid to speak. We're afraid of being judged still in this day and age.
Yes.
So I'm grateful to have a career where I can let them know what's available because of the diagnosis. but they would not be looked upon as, you know, someone that has a diagnosis in independent living. They'll look amongst like anybody else. So nobody would ever know their situation unless they tell them. And I think that's so important. But that's pretty much my journey. I'm raising girls and a little boy. I work, and I will tell you, working has been probably my biggest strength because it takes the excuses away. It takes the keeps me accountable. It keeps me responsible, and I feel like a person. Even though like today was a challenging day. I suffer from also chronic migraine headaches, and I'm going through, you know, one now. But at the end of the day, I have everything that I need in place because that's just what we do when we're survivors. We put things in place, and we just make sure that we have self-care, and we just rock that thing on out.
And that's just amazing to me because especially our community, the African-American community in mental health, you know, we have an issue when you say going to counseling. We have an issue when it comes to dealing with mental, you know, mental health and all that. We rather brush it under the rug or ignore it. But mental health is important. It's real. And there's nothing wrong. Counseling is not a curse word. It's okay. And I found that in our community a lot, we frown upon it. But, you know, when you, like you said in the beginning, when you see something going on and you know something's not right, go get yourself checked. It's okay. It's okay. And I'm gonna jump to Dr. Brown and then Ms. Rush. But before I jump to that, it's something that Dr. Blaze said earlier, you know, when you see something happen, you know, like I said, go ahead and get yourself checked out. Don't sit and not acknowledge it, not let, you know, just trying to ignore it because it may not go away. And something she said earlier, you know, for some people, and I am a minister of the gospel, I'm an elder. So, you know, some people, nothing against faith because we all have faith. But when she was saying earlier, and I agree with her, where, you know, you can, you know, have faith and you're like, you're not going to claim it. But God also gives us wisdom. He gives us wisdom to go to the doctor and get ourselves checked. And just because you still, you know, the diagnosis doesn't go away or the illness doesn't go away doesn't mean that God is not faithful. That was just part of your process. That was just what was for your process. Because with you having that, now you can inspire other people and you can, you know what I'm saying, inspire other people. So that was part of your process. That was part of your purpose. So, you know, coming from that platform with the other hat that I wear, I understand because, you know, something I said too, I'm not claiming that. And I've had to, in my older age, get to the point where I have to go, because I don't like going to the doctor. I'm a more natural person. If I can find a natural way to do something, then I would rather do it naturally. But sometimes I actually have to go to a doctor because God gives us wisdom. So I just wanted to touch on that because I remember Dr. Blaze saying that. Now I'm going to go to Dr. Brown, and the same question is going to be posed to Dr. Brown and Ms. Rush. And I think I have another person on the line. Who else is on the line?
Sheba
Quinn. Okay. All right. Yes. We're going to go in that order then. We're going to go from Dr. Brown, then we're going to go to Ms. Rush, and then we're going to go to Ms. Quinn. And I want you each to tell us, tell the listeners what the chronic illness that you're battling with and what it meant for you to, like, to be able to write this book and why it was important for you to write in this book. Start with Dr. Brown.
Okay, so you read a little of my bio about me being an at-risk kid, written off and all of that. Yeah. Me wanting to overcome that, I've always been known as a rebel with a cause. So I've always had to fight against the grain and prove myself to everyone because everyone who was supposed to help me, teachers, counselors, were the ones that were writing me off. So I always had to fight against the grain to prove myself, you know. So I was always a rebel, but for the right reasons. And I jumped through a lot of hoops, as you were able to go through my academic accolades. I was not supposed to be able to make it to college. I told my mother, don't worry about it. Don't waste your time. She's not going to do it. When I left St. Louis, they told me to come back with the bachelor's. I came back bachelor's, two master's, a doctorate, and two certifications. So I overcame that obstacle. Then I had a baby. And my life just
wow.
turned upside down. It was a blessing, but then also it was another thing. After having my daughter, I went through postpartum depression like most women do.
Wow.
But unfortunately,
yeah.
I fell
mm-hmm.
into a small demographic of women where your hormones never balance back out after that postpartum.
Wow.
And also my pregnancy also triggered fibromyalgia. I've always suffered from chronic
wow.
migraines. I was 11, so that was something I was used to dealing with. But when the fibro came, and like Gretchen said, you know, it's something people can't understand the reality of waking up in pain and going to sleep in pain because that's just not normal.
Mm.
That's human nature. I've been a rebel with a cause. I've always fought, but it is another fight when your body turns against you, when your body
mm.
becomes
wow.
your opponent.
Mm.
That is a whole nother kind of fight, and it's a whole nother kind of battle. Fibromyalgia is an autoimmune disorder as well, just like lupus is, and it's your body is literally attacking itself. And so I have fibromyalgia, I have depression, I have chronic migraines, and they have also kind of trickled into some other things. But me refusing to be the victim as usual, I said, no, I'm not going to be a victim of this. I'm going to go and learn everything about it. After I overcame that stigma you were talking about, being an African-American female, you know, my
mm-hmm.
doctor was like, this is not normal. But I'm telling my doctor, yes, it is. You know, I'm a black female. My mother raised me for this. She said it's going to be hard. This just game time. I got it. He's like, no, not. So after I overcame that stigma, I was not going to be a victim. I went back to school, got my doctorate in theology and counseling, and I'm like, I have to go out and tell women it's okay to say yes, I have this
yes.
illness, you know, and it's a chronic illness. My doctor said, if you had cancer, would you treat it? I'm like, yeah, it's cancer. He's like, well, depression is a disease. You have to treat
yes.
it. And when he broke it down to me like that, it totally just rocked my world. And so my new mission became to eliminate the stigma in the African-American community and the churches. Going through my battle
yes.
pushed me away from my religion. Not my religion, but it pushed me away from the church. Because I had such a good grounding in my foundation of religion, I have a great relationship with God. And I know that my God can come and touch me and all of this will be gone in 2 seconds. But, you know, you have your church telling you, oh, you just need God, don't take those meds, you know, it's just the spirit, all of this. And you know what? You have to be able to say, no, that's not right. You know, it's
that's
not
it.
Right. We need to start embracing that these are medical things
mm-hmm.
that are going on in people's body, and we can't just walk it away while saying you just need God. Because if you ever had an anxiety attack, you feel like you have an elephant on your chest, you feel like you have a heart attack, a stroke,
yes.
an asthma attack all at once, and I'm telling you, the last
mm-hmm.
thing I'm thinking about is looking up a Bible verse. Trust me. You know?
Yes.
So that's became my life mission, is to eliminate the stigma of mental health in the African-American community and in the churches. And like
yes.
I said, I know my God's a powerful God. He can touch me and take all this away. But guess what? Until he decides to do that, I'm going to pop this Prozac 3 times a day.
There you go.
Because I believe that he gives doctors knowledge to treat us while we're here in
yes.
this earthly body. And I'm going to do
you.
That until he says it is time for him to touch me and heal me. But I know he's bringing me through this to serve this purpose, which is why I wrote the book. This book is my
Amen.
Divine purpose, always been to motivate. I did not know why I was in those dark places. I did not know why I was crawling and I couldn't see any light. This book was my light. I saw during this book that he pulled me through all of that so I can tell this story and come out on the other side.
Mm.
I advocate.
Yes.
When I advocate, people listen. I get to CEOs in the mental health community because guess what? When I go to them, I'm not only going to them as a client and a consumer. I'm going to them as a mental health professional with doctor in front of my name, and I'm going to them as an advocate. So I'm speaking to them on 3 levels, and many people can't
yes.
do that. I talk to people on a level that what I know, they don't put in textbooks. Because you have to live it every day to be able to
yes.
know both sides of this. So that was why I wrote the book. It says this has always been my purpose. I'm a motivational speaker. I speak on this all the time. And I just want people to know it's nothing to be ashamed. I live in my truth. I tell people all that. Live in your truth. Your truth is your truth.
That's
Chad, if I tell it, you can't come at me with it. Well, did that? Well,
that's
I heard
it.
Dr. Brown, was it? Yep, sure did. But guess what? I already told that. So what you going to do? I told that last week. You know?
Exactly. So you late.
You have to live in your truth. And your truth is not for everybody. I always say, God say you're not for everybody. Confirmed.
That's
but
it.
Your truth is your truth. And it's okay. Whatever we're battling, it's for a reason. And we keep overcoming. And like I said, and like Gretchen said, and Marquita said, every day we wake up in pain. But guess what? I'ma still look good. I got a huge shoe fetish. I'ma still put on my heels. I'ma still do my
still
hair. I'ma still smile. Because as an African American female, that's how we're raised, to walk with our head held high.
Exactly.
And anything less than that is unacceptable. Even when I'm in a hospital and I got that IV in my arm, I'm walking down the hall with my head held high and holding that gown in the back so can't nobody see all my business. But my head is still high. So that's why we wrote the book.
Yes, I love it. I love it. And I know what it's like to have panic attacks because I have them. I haven't had one in a very long time, but it's like you did the last, well, actually not a very long time. Let me take that back. I had one when I was at the job I was at, because my background is I'm a behavioral lead therapist, and I work with, you know, autism, and I worked in the school system for 12 years. I was stressed. I was sitting in my office this past May of this year, and my chest tightened up. I couldn't speak. I couldn't move. I could barely breathe. And I recognized what it was because I used to have them before. It was a panic attack. And that's when I had already known that my job was becoming too much of a stressor on me. So that's when I said, okay, you know what? It's time for me to depart from here. It's time for me to go ahead, you know. But I know what panic attacks are, and they are not fun. It is literally like an elephant is sitting on your chest. You can't do anything. And, you know, I love how you just it's the truth. We need to, it's okay to say yes. It's okay to admit, okay, I have this thing. Yes, mama said it was going to be like that, but you know what? Yes, I have it. And you know what? Now let me see how I can work with it. You know, and that's what you guys have done. Now we're going to move to Miss Rush, and then we're going to go to Miss Quinn.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Okay. All right. Thank you for having me. I was just blessed to be given the opportunity to be a part of this awesome book. I had written about my journey in the first book, It's Him, and I felt like this topic has been a taboo, especially in the African-American community, because you don't understand why a certain relative died and you're not allowed to ask, what happened to sister such and such, or auntie Betsy, or whoever. Oh, you don't ask that. It ain't your business, you know. And you wonder, like, well, what is my health? You know, the doctor said, well, what is your history, health history, family history? You can't really get my full story because everything is a hush-hush. Everything is a taboo, and you don't know who has what. And my diagnosis was cancer. It was Hodgkin's lymphoma. I didn't know what an oncologist was. I didn't know what a biopsy was. I didn't know. All of this was just new. I had just had my fourth child. And I know throughout the pregnancy, they were just saying, your thyroid is a little off. We're just going to keep watch on it. And they never did anything about it. I had my son. A year later, I was diagnosed with cancer. I moved from Mississippi to Texas. And like I said, in Mississippi, the doctors never did do any kind of screening or anything else with my thyroid. So, you know, I didn't think anything of it, but once we moved to Texas, I wasn't here 2 months good, and I was diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma. I had no clue what it was. I'm Googling it, and I'm reading all the side effects and the causes and the what-ifs and listening to people, and I had to shut some of that out because I was overwhelming myself and having panic attacks myself because I'm thinking the worst instead of saying this is a mind thing right now. The same way when some of us have gone into labor, and it's a mind thing. You don't think about the pain. You just know you want to get the baby out and see the baby face. I had to get through this situation and not think about, okay, I'm feeling this and feeling that, feeling this. I can't think about that because if I do, it's mind over matter, and I'm going to let that overtake me, and I'm going to be defeated. And so if you ever watched anybody go through cancer, it's a very scary thing. It's a very humbling experience. I remember I didn't put everything in depth like I wanted to. I wanted to pour more, but I knew it was limited with our word count. And I was saying, oh, my goodness, I just want to keep going, but I had to stop it. But I remember one particular time I was in the chemo room, and I was mad at God. I was like, you know, I don't smoke, I don't drink, I don't do all this to my body, I eat organic, I work out, you know, and how could you let this happen to me? And I was just really upset because I had gotten a port, and the port didn't work. I got one chemo treatment. And it wiped all my cells out. So I was like wearing a mask. And then I was starting having chest pains. And the doctor thought, well, maybe I was having blood clots in the lungs. So he immediately was like, okay, we're going to have to just take you back into surgery. It wasn't even 3 weeks that I had surgery in the same spot. So I had to have surgery again. And I was really, really angry. I was really, really angry because I was like, I'm ready to get the chemo out of the way. I don't care what nobody else says. Try natural stuff. Just give me the stuff so I can knock it on now because I don't want to see it. You know, I don't want to deal with it. And I remember there was this old lady. I had met her in the waiting room, and I, you know, conversated real. And I'm a quiet person to an extent, so I'm just quiet. And I'm just listening to it. Yes, ma'am, old black lady. So I'm sitting. I got called back kind of simultaneously. She went before me, and I'm sitting there, and it was like trying to put the, you know, administer my port, and it's so sore there. I got stitches. I still got thread pulling out that they still ain't pulled the stitches out. And I'm just like, can you leave me alone? I got grouchy with the nurses. I was sitting on my knees actually screaming at folks because I was irritated. I didn't want to be there, and I was mad because I didn't have anybody there to hold my hand. My husband had to watch the kids. They were too far to go back there. I had no family here in Texas. So it was a very lonely experience. And the old lady, she just kind of watched me from afar, I guess. And she said, told her daughter, carry my stuff, and she walked her IV pole over next to me. She said, Sugar, what's your name? And I told her my name. I was like, I just told you in the waiting room. But I didn't tell her. I just, you know. And so she said, baby, the Lord got a long, you got a long time. You got children to raise. And she was talking to me and just, you know, comforting me. And by the time she finished, they had already popped the needle. And I was like, no, they got the I ain't working in the kitchen before. I was just spitting fire. But before I had got there, I was fussing at my husband. I was crying. I was mad. I was like, I'm through. I don't want anymore. This is painful, blah, blah. He called my parents. Can you please talk to your child? Because I can't get her to come to the hospital. And it was just a bad day for me. But God sent that lady, and she told me she had been blind. She told me she had been given 6 months to live. She said, baby, you don't know how old I am. That was telling me X amount of years ago. I'm still here, and I'm laughing at doctors telling me what they're telling me now. And so what I gather from all of that is it's not, oh, the Lord going to heal you. Oh, somebody's prophesying. It's not any of those things. It's what you believe, how strong your mind can be, because we can have a strong mind. We can have strong faith. And the medicines that are put before us that God provides and directs the doctors, if we don't have five sisters to use it, then that's your problem. I've seen people say, no, I'm going to go the natural way, and they 6 feet under. So, yes, I'm going to take the medicine that's before me. Yes, I understand some of the side effects. I block that out. I want to hear about it. I do suffer from brain fog. The coordination, keeping myself organized at times, feeling overwhelmed, I still feel that you're never the same after cancer. I'm thankful that I've recovered from the chemo. I'm still having side effects from that and my radiation. I've had to have 5 different surgeries back-to-back in less than 3 years, and it has taken a toll in my finances. It's taken a toll. I won't even discuss some of the bills, the $10,000 bills here. It's overwhelming. No one understands. It's, oh, you got up cancer. That's good. They don't understand the side effects years later, what you have to go through. It's not just a physical, mental side effect. It's a financial side effect that you have to go through. And so it's rough. It's never the same. And it goes through the health care of how the United States run the health care. Also, I don't even want to get on that rampage of how insurance is. But overall, this experience sharing these stories with these phenomenal ladies has just been a humbling experience. The journey has been, it's been peaceful to me. It has brought peace to me, or I can go and tell somebody who's going through it. I know I had to go through what I had to go through for someone else, because as the lady was comforting me as I was getting my port administered, just the smell of it, I was always vomiting. I had no weight on me. My nails was black. My feet was black. I mean, chemo had me just, I thought I was ugly. My mother was like, girl, you're not ugly, blah, blah, you know, anything to cover me. But I knew what I looked like. And I remember growing up sitting in the bathroom floor of the hospital room, and this lady cleaned me up. She said, I said, you are so nice. You're doing all this. I said, I guess I'm a female Joe. And she looked at me and turned her head to the side. Well, she said, that means you're blessed and highly favored. And that right there brought, like, tears to my eyes, because there are some people who cannot afford to get some of the medicines that I got. Some medicines I couldn't get. And I remember them telling me it's $1,000-some, and your insurance knocked it down to, like, $800, and I'm sitting up here scratching my head, like, I just bought diapers, and I don't even know how I'm going to get the $800 to get the medicine that I need. And long story short about that, I went in to get my chemo and fell asleep, and the nurse woke me up, and she says, Ms. Rush, I need you to sign these papers. I said, what am I signing? You know, and she says, oh, this is the medicine in your drip, just to make sure you can acknowledge that you're getting it. I couldn't afford it. But organizations that advocate for my cancer pay for it.
Wow.
And I was crying and signing at the same time. Just the small things matter. And, you know, when people are going through illnesses, God doesn't want us to major on the minor. He wants us to look at the whole picture. He wants us to believe and utilize the tools before us. I cannot stress that enough. If chemo is what the doctors say you need, if any kind of mental illness medicine, if the doctor says, please use that. Use that.
Exactly.
And not say, well, I'm going to use it, because God gave you 5 senses. Now, that's what he did give you. He gave you 5 senses. So he wants us to use it wisely. So
use it wisely.
I walk away from this experience humble, more mindful of living on purpose and walking in my purpose.
Wow. Oh, that is awesome. That's a lot to handle, that's a lot to go through. All of these things that you ladies are talking about, and I want the listeners to understand, and if you don't get anything else from it, get how they all made a decision that they acknowledged the illness, but then they made a decision to live. Ms. Quinn, can you tell the listeners about the illness that the illness that you're having to deal with, and what it was like for you, and be able to write about it?
Well, I also suffer with lupus, just like Dr. Blaze, and it, like she said, it's a daily battle. My struggle was that I spent 20 years in the military, and I retired from the military, went to school, got my degree, my doctoral degree in education, and had big plans to, climb up the education chain, and all of a sudden, it just was not happening. My body was not allowing me to press forward as I wanted to. I did finish school, but unfortunately, I did not get to go into the teaching arena like I had planned to. And so I ended up making a decision to quit my job and to homeschool my kids. So I constantly deal with just feeling like not enough, not enough, because I have so much knowledge and so much wisdom based on just, being in the military for 20 years and spending over 20 years securing a doctoral degree. And sometimes I feel like that my illness just has me trapped, in my life. So that is one of my greatest struggles.
Yes. You still there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. I want to ask each of you, because, you know, I always extend my show just a little bit because I know that sometimes the conversation gets really good. And each of your stories are just so unique and so powerful. But what I want to do before time does run out, I want to start back with Dr. Blaze. And I want you to tell the listeners, for those who are out there who are listening that is battling with some kind of chronic illness or whatever the case may be, if you could tell them anything about the importance of living a full life, the importance of not letting it overtake you, the importance of showing up, if you can tell the listeners that each of you, and I'm going to start with Dr. Blaze, and then we're going to go in the same order that we went. We're going to go Dr. Blaze, Gretchen, and then we're going to go to Dr. Brown, Ms. Rush, and Ms. Quinn. Can you start with that, Dr. Blaze, and tell the listeners just something encouraging if they're battling with some kind of illness?
Yes. So for me, I don't think it was initially it was my intention to not interrupt my life with the lupus diagnosis, and I continued doing all the stuff that I had previously been doing. Prior to lupus, I was also a Zumba instructor. I used to work out 5 days a week with a trainer at 4 o'clock in the morning. And then
wow.
I would come home and get dressed and go to work and teach all day. I was the yearbook advisor at my school. I would attend extracurricular activities to support my students. I was also a member of the dance ministry at my church, and we rehearsed twice a week. So, and I was single at the time, and I was, you know, very actively dating. I may go on 2 or 3 dates a week. So, you know, how was I having the time and the energy to do all of this stuff? I can't even tell you. And I traveled frequently, and every summer I worked in a different city managing, in multiple cities around the country, managing STEM programs. I had such a very full life. And so initially I said, I'm not ready to give any of this up. And, you know, but once my health started to deteriorate, slowly I saw myself peeling off one thing at a time. Actually, even my sorority, Sigma Gamma Rho Sorority Incorporated, I pledged grad chapter, and I did that like right in the middle of when my lupus really started to kind of get out of control a little bit. And at that time I had just quit the dance ministry, but then I joined Sigma Gamma Rho, and I think it was because I was trying to prove to myself, like, okay, I have to give up one thing, but I'm going to pick up something else in the place of it. But as the time continued to go on, my health, I started to experience more and more health challenges, and it just became, you know, increasingly more difficult for me to get up each day and do the things that I had previously done. So it got to a point where I went from high functioning, doing everything, to low functioning, doing barely anything. And I lived that way for a couple of years, and I realized how depressed and sad and lonely I was becoming. And at the point that my mama moved in with me and became my full-time caregiver, you know, I really shouldn't have been trying to date or do any of that, but I was still trying to, honey, go out on dates and still working on my doctoral degree. And still picking up little activities at school that I knew I really couldn't do it, but I would put my name on it anyway and somehow, you know, just figure it out. But as I started to change my healthcare regimen and I started to change my mindset even around certain things,
yes.
I won't say that I never saw myself as a fully sick person. Okay, so there, I wanted compassion from people because I needed their assistance at certain times, but I did not want them to feel sorry for me, and I did not want to be, even on the days that my mama had to physically put me in the shower, physically take me out and dress me, even on those days, if there was something I could do for myself, I would say, Mama, please just let me do it. Even if it was nothing but pick up the TV remote and turn it. Let me turn the TV myself, please, this one time. So I never was at a point where I wanted pity. You know, I still wanted some type of independence. And so as I started to realize that the meds weren't working and I changed my regimen, as I could add things on, I added them on.
Yeah.
But the difference this time was I did it with limitations. And I said,
yeah,
okay,
mm-hmm,
if I'm going to do this activity, this is how much of it I can do. And once I hit that max, don't do any more. And that's very hard for a person who is a high achiever, overachiever, who is, and I'm not saying these things to be braggadocious, but these are the facts about me. Not to sound like Cat Williams from that video. These are just the facts. But these are the facts. But they are the facts that when I dedicate myself to doing something, I do it to a high level of excellence. And so it's hard to put a limitation on yourself when you know, if it wasn't for this little ache or pain, or if I could just raise my arm 1 inch higher, oh, then I could get back in the dance studio and I could do this and I could do that. So it's really hard. But I will say to anyone, do your best, your new normal. And know that a lot of times, you know, we are our own worst critic. When I was at my worst as a teacher, I was at my personal worst. I was offered a position in leadership, a position that I could not get when I was coming in there performing at my peak, and I was doing everything I could to impress everybody around me so that I could get noticed. And I was passed over so many times. But at the point that I sat down with my principal and told her, I can't do this anymore. It's too hard on my body. I'm crying. I'm literally crying on the way to work every day. I'm crying at lunch. I'm sneaking to the bathroom to cry for 3 minutes while my kids are doing group work. I told her, I can't take this anymore. And she said to me, but you're the strongest teacher on my faculty. So what if I just create this position for you, and then when you're in pain, you can just go in your office and close the door and nobody will bother you. And I thought, wow, she still sees all of that in me, and I feel like I'm coming in here just barely doing enough to make it to 3:30. So a lot of times,
so if that's your worst, it makes you wonder, like, what was somebody else's best?
What exactly? And my husband used to tell me all the time, he was like, you don't see this, but he said, Marquita, your 50% is way past everybody else's 100%.
Wow.
So give yourself some grace that even when you think the little bit is not enough, you don't know who's looking at that little bit and it's being their source of inspiration and they're drawing from you. So, you know, accept the limitations, be okay with them, and know that even what you feel like is not enough, somebody else is pulling a whole lot of strength and inspiration from that, and they need that from you. And it is important for you to show up in the best way that you can possibly show up, and that whatever you have to give, if you're giving it genuinely and authentically, it's always going to be more than enough.
Wow. That's wonderful. Okay. We're going to go in the same order. Gretchen.
Real quick, I'm going to make this short and sweet because I know we're running out of time. All I want to say to inspire someone today is just remember, everybody got something. We just hide it differently than others.
Mm-hmm.
And I give you permission today to learn something new that resonates with you that will get you back to greatness.
Wow. I love
it. That's it. That's all I got.
I love it. I love it. Dr. Brown.
Yes. Marquita said a lot for us. I know my situation was, like I said, you know, I wasn't supposed to make it this far. So I kind of felt like I told you about the first baby. The second baby came and just destroyed whatever the first one didn't. And so they were like, you can't work anymore. And I'm like, whoa. I jumped through every obstacle to get on a team. Now you tell me I can't play in a game? So that was a kind of stroke to me, but I was not trying to hear that. And so I still pushed, and I still pushed and pushed because you were not going to tell me I was not going to work. And I would work until I couldn't work anymore and work until I couldn't work anymore, until I couldn't get up anymore, until I had no choice but to sit down. And then I just started to learn that every time I tried to push myself to go to a job sometimes, me not being able to go was God's way of saying, I don't want you to do that because I'm trying to take you through this process for a reason. I need you to sit down, go through this, because what your purpose is to go out and tell your story. See, everybody that goes through these things can't speak openly about them because we have pride, we have self-esteem, we don't want nobody to know. But he picks certain people who don't care. Like me, I don't have, but pride comes before the fall. I'm going to tell you. Like I said, I live in my truth. So, guys, I need you to sit down, go through this. But my thing is that I was always raised to not show weakness. And so that's the thing that I've always had an issue with was you don't show any weakness, because if you show weakness, you get exploited. You know, you get, you know, survival of the weakness. The compassion I wanted from my family and friends who did not understand, because this has never happened. It was very new when I was going through it 19 years ago. Fibromyalgia was not as well known as it is now. I had to go to 6 doctors who kept telling me you're fine because there was no blood test to say, yes, positive, this is fibromyalgia. And I'm like Marquita, you know, I joined my sorority, Delta Sigma Theta, in undergrad. So I was used to hustling. I was used to always being in the community, working. Then when I graduated, I was in a grad chapter, working. I have a career. I have 2 children, working. Now I can't even get up. I did most of my parenting from the bed. And I used to feel bad about that. We used to play games. We used to have picnics. We used to do. But I realized I was a better parent from the bed than some of these parents I as walking on their 2 feet every day. I raised my children better from my bed sometimes than some parents that can walk and breathe fine every day. So the point is, I just want to give to people is that, one, educate yourself. Like I said, I was not going to be a victim. I have chronic illness, but it doesn't have me. So educate yourself about whatever they say that you are diagnosed with. Learn as much as you can and educate your family, because it's important you have their support. The next thing is, be your own advocate with your doctors, with your resources. You know, I feel like I'm constantly fighting a system that's put in place to help me sometimes. Like, you know, one of my co-authors said, the insurance, the money, you have no idea, it's draining. Sometimes I have to think, even with insurance, I have to say, okay, which medicine can I do without this month? You know, I have to pick and choose. So you have to be your own advocate. If you don't fight for yourself, no one will. But you have to educate yourself to know how to fight for yourself and to know what you're fighting for. And then finally, join organizations. Join, you know, I have mental health. I'm very active with NAMI. I'm very active in multiple mental health, multiple chronic migraine associations, multiple fibromyalgia associations. And what that does is it keeps you updated on any new resources that may come out, any new treatments. It also gives you a support group. And it also makes you available to help come up with a cure with what you're suffering from. Once again, I say, can't no one tell our story better than us? A doctor can only tell what they've been told. But we live it every day. We need to be a part of these organizations so we can help come up with a cure to cure ourselves. And I can't think of anything more empowering than that, to know that you are part of coming up with a cure to cure whatever you're battling.
Wow, that's wonderful. That's wonderful, and you're absolutely right. I'm gonna touch on each one of those in just a moment. Miss Rush, can you just give some encouraging words for somebody, and then we're gonna go to Miss Quinn.
Okay, the thing that I would just leave with the listeners is having to have gone through what I've gone through. And, you know, 4 kids, 2 in diapers, 1 in preschool, 1 in second grade, I learned to slow down and appreciate the very smallest things in life, the things that we never take the time to absorb in. and slow it down and appreciate the small things in life.
Wow. Okay, Ms. Quinn?
I think for me, it was just giving myself permission to just live my new normal. And I think that goes for anyone, just like Dr. Blaze said. I mean, things that I couldn't do, I could do, I can't do them to the same degree anymore, but that doesn't mean that I can't do it, period. It just has to, I have to redefine those boundaries and learn to work with them and bring my kids along on the journey. You know, just like Dr. Brown said, I mean, I do more parenting from the bed or the couch than a little bit, but it works. You know, everyone is still happy. Everyone is still fed. And, hey, it's the new normal.
Wow. You ladies, thank you so much for joining the show tonight. Before I close out, I want each of you to tell, you know, in the same order, if you have anything upcoming, where they can purchase the book and you know, how people can follow you. But I just want to say to the listeners that I hope that you all were as encouraged as I was encouraged, even with just listening to these wonderful ladies with certain things that I know that I deal with, you know, with, even with just life situations, that everything that they said encouraged me to showing up is half the battle. If you just show up, that's half the battle. Know your limits and don't push yourself. Take your time. Enjoy the things that you have. Be thankful. Enjoy the things that you have around you. Learn. Open up a book. Look it up. Research it. Find out the things that are going on. And it fails my memory who said it in the beginning. And I want to say it was Gretchen in the beginning when you know, search, find out what's going on. Don't just take what somebody else says, but make sure that you research. Find out different things. Don't just take what they say and don't find out about it. And something, I think what it was, I'm not sure, and if I'm speaking about the wrong person, then you guys can correct me, but something that may react one way when you're taking a medicine in somebody else's body may not react the same way. So if you know that something you're taking is not reacting the right way, then voice your opinion. Say, okay, you know what? You tell your doctor, look, this is not working for me. Can we find another avenue? But be honest with yourself. Be honest with your diagnosis and whatever the case may be, and then find your way to deal with your new normal. Because what's normal for you may not be normal for someone else, but find your way to deal with your new normal and get in the support group. There's nothing worse than dealing with something like this by yourself, locking yourself away, giving up on all aspects of life and just basically just kind of walking through the day slowly or not even walking through it at all. Find support groups. Find others who are dealing with the same situation and know, okay, you're not in this by yourself. And for our community, it's okay to seek help. It's okay to say, okay, something is wrong, and seek help. It is fine. It doesn't mean that you're weak. It doesn't mean that you're not, you know, that there's something wrong. Everything doesn't need to be swept up under the rug. And even if you have to get on some of your family members' nerves, find out about your history. Who had this? I may not be the first person in my family who dealt with this. So who in the family had this? I know you don't want to talk about it, but I need to know because this is my life right now. And I need to know so I can know, you know, is this the first time this came up? Is it something that is hereditary? I need to know. Now it's not a time for us to be hush-hush. Let's talk about this. And it may be difficult because we all know how our families can be and talking about things, and we do like to sweep things under the rug, or if you don't talk about it, it'll disappear. It does not disappear. Is still there. It just creates and builds up and causes other issues. So talk and find out what's going on. Find out all these things. Now I'm going to start with Dr. Blaze, and we're going to work our way back in the same order. Tell everyone where they can find your book, what you got upcoming, where they can follow you. Dr. Blaze.
Everyone can follow me on Facebook at Marquita Smith Blades. They can purchase the book at drmarquitablades.com. And I think I'm pretty quiet for the rest of the year. I got some speaking engagements But other than that, just they can watch my show, the Dr. Marquita Blaze Show. It's on the first and third Sunday of every month from 5 to 6. And that runs from my Facebook page as well. So just follow me on Facebook.
Okay. Gretchen?
Yes. I don't have any projects going on currently right now, but be prepared for me to do some amazing things next year. And you can follow me on Facebook under The Residual Queen. So you can also purchase a book personally from me, and I can also do personal messages. And you can find the book on my website under https dot and then it's the colon and hashtag theresidualqueen.com. Kind of interesting how it's set up, but you can also go through my website from my Facebook page, The Residual Queen.
All right. All right. We're going to go to Dr. Brown, I think, is next.
Yes. I have a few speaking engagements, local, but you can also contact me for speaking engagements. My email is spiritualfortitude, spiritualfortitude, @gmail.com. I am on Facebook, Tori Anderson Brown, and also to purchase the book from me, my PayPal is PayPal.me/Dr. Tori, T-O-R-R-E, Brown, just like the color, /
All right. All right. Ms. Rush.
Yes. The upcoming book that I'm working on right now is Absent Yet Present and In the Place of Humility. It should be out within the next 2 months. I don't have any speaking engagements right off. However, I could be found on Facebook and on Instagram, Survivor of Cancer, for Instagram, and on Facebook, HCM, Effective Disarmament.
All right. And Ms. Quinn.
All right. Well, you can find me on my website is drshivaquinn.com, and you can find me all over social media at drshivaquinn. And in accepting my new normal, I have, when we did this project, I was deeply rooted in homeschool coaching and all that. But as of the past couple of months, more so this week, I have retired from homeschool coaching and assuming my position in my kids' business as the senior chef at Diggy Into the Cake. So, yeah, so what I got going on is I'm baking my butt off for the holidays and the rest of the year. And if you would like to order a cake or if you would like to book my kid to come and teach you how to make cakes or to speak about cakes, you can find us at ziggyandtootie.com.
Yes, and I was going to mention that earlier because I see the pictures you post on Facebook and how they're in there cooking and baking. And I'm like, that is the cutest thing. Like, they are really into this, you know, to get them so in tune and get them in there baking. That is just wonderful.
Oh,
I see
they
them,
are no
you know,
joke.
Baking. Yeah, I see, and they, you know, and I love that about on your page. I watch how you do outings with them, you know, because you homeschool and you do outings with them, and they're out there, and they're just beautiful young ladies that you can tell
Thank
are well,
you.
You know, not even meeting them face to face, you can tell by the post that you put that they're well rounded and they got their heads on. They know what they want and they're about their business. And especially
yes,
when they're
ma'am.
In that kitchen and you post the pictures of them baking. They're about their business. Thank you all again so much for joining me tonight. I really would love to continue this conversation, even if it's on an individual basis, because all of you have so much to offer. And this book, if you guys, you heard where you can go and purchase the book, go and purchase the book. Anyone out there, like I said earlier, who is suffering from any or dealing with any kind of illness, chronic illness, and even just situations in life, I believe that when you purchase this book, you're going to be encouraged and inspired to live your new normal and live a full life, even with the diagnosis. So thank you, ladies, so much for joining me tonight. on the Be Inspired with Michelle G show. You have been an inspiration even to me. So don't be some of the things that you guys said. I like little quotes and I like the way people word things. So if you see it and see me repost it, then, you know, I will give you credit the first time. Then after that, I'm just going to say it, okay? Just so you know.
I'm just letting you know. It's free game.
I'm just letting you know already. Because I write, I take notes from people on the show and I just write little things down. Now, the first time I post it, I will give you credit. But after that, it's just, you know, I'm just going to say it, okay? Just, just to let you know. Thank you all so much. Thank you, Dr. Blaze, for having the vision and sharing your vision with these wonderful ladies. Thank you, Gretchen. Thank you, Dr. Brown. Thank you. Thank you to Ms. Quinn. Thank you to Ms. Rush. Thank you all. I really appreciate you guys being transparent. Being transparent and not pretending like everything. You're welcome. It was my honor to have you on this platform, because a lot of times we try to hide too much. And it's okay sometimes with certain things to be transparent, especially when it's going to help others. And I thank you for sharing a part of your battle with the audience. I thank you all.
Thank you. You're welcome.
To all my listeners out there, thank you for joining me for another week of the Be Inspired with Michelle G show. Join me next week for another inspirational show. You know how I flow. I just flow however God leads me. I may have a guest. I may not. I may get up here and I may just talk of something that God has given me or something that, and I have a transparent moment. But you know how the Be Inspired with Michelle G show flows. It's just all a platform to inspire and to motivate people to live in their purpose, to walk in their purpose, and to serve their purpose. Thank you all. I thank all the ladies who joined me tonight. You guys go purchase the book. Thank you all once again. And you guys, as I always say, good night and be blessed.
Good night.
Good night. Good night.
That is good.
God is all the time. He is good. God is good all the time. He is good. God is all the time.